getting a view into the locker room that you don't normally see.
A sanitized view.
Not a natural scorer.
The honest opinion, he's not doing the job that they hired him to do.
I just disagree.
Accelerating your hockey learning curve. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by my colleague, Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve. Our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is, of course, IllegalCurve.com. Ezzy, good morning to you, good sir. I like your sporting your Sharp the Peg shirt, so just to make sure you knew where you were coming into the studio. You wanted to make sure you weren't wearing your, like, you know, a 416 shirt, so you thought you might be in Toronto or something. The Peg, you are in Winnipeg.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it, Drew. Now that I've gone to Toronto, I'm
there
pretty Toronto these days, but
yeah, you're big timing me already.
Yeah, well, I always big time
that's
you
true.
When we're not in the studio. But before we get into all these signings here, I got to wish you and Rory and everybody listening a happy Canada Day.
Yes.
And before we kick off, we also got to wish Neil and Jen, our good friends,
happy wedding weekend.
Happy wedding weekend.
Yes.
They're getting married tomorrow.
That's right.
I'm in the wedding party, so
may
Neil
God
and Jen,
may God help them.
Yeah, we love you, Neil and Jen, and we look forward to celebrating it with you. But I think we should now maybe get into the signings.
Well, you know, you hate these weeks when you got to do the show and there's just nothing going on in the world of the NHL. What a crazy, crazy week. I mean, it started on, what was that, Thursday? Wednesday? I can't even keep track.
It was Wednesday.
Wednesday,
yeah.
When the entire hockey world just melted down in the course of about 23 minutes. And, of course, we'll you know, get into explicit detail about all of those trades and signings and just mind-blowing news. It came rapid fire, one after the other after the other. It just crazy, crazy. I can't remember a time like that in the NHL at all.
Producer Rory and I were talking about it right before the show started, and I basically said that Wednesday, that 23 minutes, Drew,
yeah,
was probably one of the best days ever in NHL history. Drew, it was like the equivalent of kids being able to open their Christmas presents like 4 days early.
Sure.
Because July 1st is always awesome with all the signings. You know, you wake up, it's Canada Day. Well, and if you're in the U.S., it's 3 days before Independence Day. But needless
sure
to say, we're in here in Canada, and July 1st is always really exciting, especially for us, because we always do the free agency recap show, right? But that was what it was like. And the fact that you had three huge pieces of news happening basically 5 or 6 minutes after the other,
yeah,
was really incredible. Steven Stamkos signing and deciding to remain in Tampa Bay was actually the third biggest piece of news that day.
It was absolutely incredible, and we'll get into all of that as the show unfolds over the next 3 hours. Let's start with the Winnipeg Jets. They had three player transactions yesterday during the opening of the free agency period. We start with the biggest of the three. That is the signing of Sean Mathias to a 2-year, $4.25 million contract. He's going to get paid the salary cap hit of $2.125 million over the next two seasons. You know, your thoughts on the Jets signing Mathias? Well, maybe we'll start with, you know, when you see Mathias, you've watched him over the years, you know, what kind of player do you see in Mathias, and how do you see him fitting in with the Winnipeg Jets organization?
Yeah, it's an interesting signing, Drew, because we knew that the Jets were most likely going to sign a defenseman, and we're going to get into Brian Strait in a second.
Sure.
But when you talk about a guy like Sean Mathias, he's a guy who I think really got his career going again in Toronto. And that Toronto team last year was awful. They finished last. They got the first overall pick. Exactly what Brendan Shanahan and Lou Lamoriello wanted, right? Mathias is a guy who was drafted by Florida. Big guy. I've always been a fan of his game. He's more of an offensive guy. He's not a very physical guy. He's not a defensive forward. This guy's an offensive-minded player. He hasn't had a season in the NHL where you'd look at him and you'd say, okay, well, this guy's a bona fide 30-goal scorer. I think his best season in the league is 14 goals. He might have had more than that, 15 goals, something like that.
18 goals in 2014-15 with the Canucks. 18 goals, 9 assists, 27 points. That's his career high in points in a season.
So he's a guy that he can score, Drew.
I mean,
scoring 18 goals is not easy in the NHL. You're right. That was with the Canucks. He's been on, this is his fifth team, I believe. He's been a bit of a journeyman at this point, but he's a guy also that can play on the penalty kill. So he does have, and again, I shouldn't say that he isn't at all a defensive forward, but he's more so of an offensive-minded forward. But the fact is he can play center and he can play wing. And for me, he really ideally slots in on the third line. And, you know, this is where you get into some question marks for the Winnipeg Jets. Where does a guy like Alexander Burmistrov slot in now? Where does Adam Lowry slot in now? You have a glut now, Drew, of forwards in the bottom six, which is a good thing. So I really like this signing by Kevin Cheveldayoff. You sign him to a two-year contract, reasonable cap hit. He gives you depth in the bottom six. And going into free agency, that's what we said the Jets needed, right? We said they needed more depth in the bottom six, and we said they needed another left-side defenseman. Now, you could argue that maybe the Jets should have gone after a Dennis Seidenberg, for example, a more established left-side defenseman. Not saying Dennis Seidenberg
It's also not too late. They could possibly still dip their toe into the defense market.
Needless to say, they needed a left-side defenseman. Sure. And you could argue, see, again, it depends on what happens with Jacob Trouba, right? If Jacob Trouba signed to a long-term extension, he's going to slot in on the left side with Dustin Byfuglien. That's where he finished last season, and I think he did a pretty good job. Yeah. Sure, he's a right-shot defenseman, but he slots in on that second pairing with Dustin Byfuglien, right? So you're not going to go after, for all of the fans out there, I realize that, you know, it would have been really exciting if the Jets went after a bona fide top four left-side defenseman.
Dan Hamhuis, for example.
Exactly. And by the way, that was a good signing by Dallas.
We'll get into it.
But Dan Hamhuis, yes, for example, I don't think they were going after one of those marquee defensemen, if you want to call Dan Hamhuis a marquee defenseman. Needless to say, he's an excellent defenseman who you would consider a top four defenseman. So, needless to say, back to Sean Mathias, I think that's a very good signing, and he's a guy that now gives Paul Maurice and the coaching staff more options.
Let me ask you this. So Sean Mathias is clearly a depth player, and I don't think anybody would have a problem with the Jets increasing the depth forwards that they have. I mean, he's a guy, you know, he can probably play in their top nine. I mean, if everything, you know, comes out fantastically and he happens to be a fourth line guy for the Jets, so be it. Two-part question. One, do you see him playing more center or more on the wing? Because based on the comments from Kevin Cheveldayoff yesterday, it sounds like they figure Sean Mathias is going to factor in as a winger more than a centerman for the Jets. But the flexibility is nice. And two, last year, so go back 12 months, right after free agency, everybody said the Jets needed depth players. They needed guys like Lee Stempniak, or they needed guys that had, you know, that had finished the season the year before.
Yep.
And they didn't go that way, and they went with the youth movement, and they got the year of growing pains or whatever. Why this year? Do you think that this is an admission by Kevin Cheveldayoff to some extent, that he was wrong last year in not providing a little bit of a buffer for his young players to get their feet under him, and that's why he goes out and he gets Mathias in the lineup?
It's a good question, and I think one of the reasons is Patrick Laine, because I think the Jets now know that they have a really good shot at making the playoffs. And if you get into the playoffs, who knows what's going to happen, right? But you have Patrick Laine and Kyle Connor coming into the system now, mm-hmm. coming into the NHL, and you have a better team. And I think last year we all agreed on this show that the Jets' record was really not an indication of how good this team is. I mean, this team really struggled, the special teams. We've gone over this quite a bit on this show. But I think it's part of that. I mean, you can't overstate the fact that the Jets missed Lee Stempniak last year. And you could say that Lee Stempniak is not a very good
veteran sort of influence in their top nine.
Right, Drew, but specifically Lee Stempniak.
Sure, because he finished the year with the Jets and he wanted to come back to
yes.
the Jets.
Yes, so whether it is, like you said, Lee Stempniak or another veteran forward who can give you 15 to 20 goals on the third line, that's what the Jets were missing, because the Jets did not get enough scoring from their third and fourth lines last year. It was clearly evident. The year that the Jets went to the playoffs and they had Jiří Tlusti and they had Lee Stempniak and they had Jim Slater and they had Michael Frolik, that was their secondary scoring after guys like Blake Wheeler, Andrew Ladd, Brian Little, right? So I think absolutely the Jets identified a need for a veteran established forward in their bottom six, and that's what they got with Sean Mathias. Now, Sean Mathias, I think, you look at him, he's not exactly a guy who's at the end of his career. He's still in his mid to late 20s.
He's 28 years old.
Right. And he's got a lot of good hockey left in him. And, you know, if you ask anybody, in the Leafs organization last year before he got traded to the Colorado Avalanche. And by the way, he was pretty good on the Avalanche, too. He got 11 points in 20 games. He was a good player for the Leafs last year, and that Leafs team was a makeshift mishmash of buyouts and professional tryout.
Sure, the Leafs were a disaster, and Sean Matthias came and...
He was a good player for them.
He was a professional player, and you know what? He put up enough points to get the Leafs a draft pick in return, and that's all they really wanted.
Yes, and now he comes into the Jets, and, you know, Drew, you asked, is he going to play center or wing? He can play both. When you look at the Jets, they do have an abundance of centers, right?
Sure.
You talk about Adam Lowry, Alexander Burmistrov. Those are both guys
that they've tried.
They've tried at center and wing. So whether he plays center or wing, I would expect to see him as a staple on the third line. And regardless if he drops down to the fourth line because they're having issues.
They're having great success, you know, with other players and everything else. I mean, it's 2 years. It's a little over $2 million a season. There's not much to dislike about it because it's not going to make you rip your hair out at any point in time.
It's very low risk.
It's very low risk. I mean, so it's 2 years, and if he doesn't pan out, and you know, it's not a big deal. I think but he's certainly an NHL caliber player.
And one thing to note, you know, we mentioned Sean Matthias has got size and he can play on the penalty kill. He's a fast guy, good skater. So for this Winnipeg Jets team, you bring in Kyle Connor, you bring in Patrick Laine. You know, the Jets are a fast team, and Sean Matthias fits right into that.
Sure. Now let's talk about the other two signings. We'll start with the local boy, Quinton Howden. He had not been given a qualifying offer by the Florida Panthers. He hits unrestricted free agency at a younger age, at the age of 25, and the Jets scoop him up to a two-way deal. In the NHL, it will pay him $650,000. Of course, he can also go down and play in the AHL for a lesser salary. Quinton Howden, what can the Jets hope for from him? Sort of maybe try and catch lightning in the pan, flash in the pan a little bit. You know, maybe it's a guy who needs a new place, needs a new change of venue, and coming home does something good for him.
Yeah, and Quinton Howden even admitted he was a little bit surprised that he wasn't qualified by the Florida Panthers. And,
sure,
you know, we talked about Sean Matthias last, Drew. He's 28. Quinton Howden's only 24, former first-round pick of the Florida Panthers. We actually just talked to his brother Brett at the draft in Buffalo. He was just drafted by Tampa Bay. So we were expecting there to be a bit of a Florida rivalry there. But like that signing as well, the way I look at it, it gives you an option, a veteran option, because at 24, he is a veteran. When you talk about some of the other guys the Jets have, like Joel Armia and Marco Dano, he's got NHL experience.
Sure.
He played, I believe, about 50 games last year for the Florida Panthers.
58, yeah.
Andrew, if he's not in your NHL lineup, I look at him as a replacement for Matt Halaschuk, because Matt Halaschuk wasn't signed, so Quinton Howden kind of gives you that veteran, speedy presence in the AHL, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't be surprised if Quinton Howden splits the season between the AHL or the NHL. Maybe he spends the majority of the season in the NHL. That would be great, but needless to say, I think it's just a great story. He's from Oak Bank.
Mm-hmm.
The Jets haven't had an abundance of Manitoba-born players on the team. Eric Fair, Derek Meach were two of the other guys that were born in Manitoba who were signed by the Jets. So this is just a great story. It was also, I'm sure you saw when he told his mother that he was signed going to the Jets, she dropped the phone. So it's a pretty good story. Anytime a guy from Manitoba gets to play and put on the Jets jersey, it's a great story.
And again, 1 year, there's nothing about it that's going to make you... there's nothing about it that should make you upset. And truthfully, if you thought that the Jets were going to be a big player in free agency, you know, if you thought that they were going to be up there, you know, in the conversations for Louis Erickson or Milan Lucic or, you know, Kyle Okposo, you really haven't been paying close enough attention. That's not for, you know, it's not the Jets' style as an organization. Frankly, I mean, you know, people get upset when they hear it. A lot of players don't want to come to Winnipeg. It's not their first choice right now. So to think that the Jets were going to, you know, be active at the big names, I think is probably a little bit of fooling yourself.
Yeah, I agree. I never thought that the Jets were seriously in on Kyle Okposo. I'm not saying that the Jets weren't serious when they spoke with him.
Yeah, I'm sure the Jets would love to have been in.
But they certainly, Drew, weren't in on Milan Lucic. They weren't in on Louis Erickson. They weren't in on a lot of the big-time free agents, Steven Stamkos. They weren't in on, right? So I actually thought Chevy did pretty well here on July 1st. I mean, you address a need for bottom six depth on forward.
Mm-hmm.
You bring in a left side defenseman in Brian Strait, and I was taking a lot of flack on Twitter. I mean,
look, Brian Strait is, if the assumption is,
he's a veteran NHL defenseman that gives them an option.
He gives them, if you
for
need,
the five or six spot.
I think even if he's a press box guy, if you need nine defensemen, if you look at the Jets' history, if you look at the pattern that they've gone in, they've usually had 8 or 9 defensemen under contract.
Right.
And so, you know, Adam Pardy, you know, Brian Strait, as far as I'm concerned, is sort of taking the Adam Pardy role.
Yes.
In that he is a guy who might play a little bit for the Jets when they need him. If he doesn't pan out, it's 1 year, it's $600,000. He's not the panacea to the Jets' problems on the left side. But, you know, it's 1 year. It's $600,000. It was Canada Day. If this is what's getting you upset, maybe time to reevaluate your priorities.
Well, and, you know, everybody thinks that this means Josh Morrissey isn't going to play in the NHL. That's not what that means at all. I mean, it just gives them another option. I mean, it doesn't mean Brian Strait's going to play all 82 games. It doesn't mean Josh Morrissey's going to play all 82 games. They needed another veteran option on the left side. They're weaker on the left side, as you know, Drew. So you bring in a guy. By the way, Brian Strait is a guy that's played top four for the New York Islanders, and I realize everybody was pointing out his possession numbers to me. He's a stay-at-home defensive-minded defenseman, but he can move the puck. I mean, he certainly can. He can chip in a little bit offensively. He's not going to score 10 goals, but he's a serviceable defenseman. That's the word I was using.
Sure. He's depth. Right. He's a one-year depth defenseman who may play for the team or very well may be in the press box for the entire season. And, you know, you need those players. It's you know, you need those players because you've seen over the years the number of defensemen that teams churn through in the course of an 82-game season is a significant number. And so you get this guy for $600,000, and if he sits in your press box all season, great. That means you're healthy. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to look at the Winnipeg Jets roster. We're going to look at potential pairings, potential forward groups for next season. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Awesome. I can't wait to get started. You see the fans in Canada, how passionate they are and stuff. You just feed off that. And I mean, Winnipeg's been a place I've played and played in, and it's so loud, and the fans are going crazy, and I just can't wait to hear how loud it is in that building and finally playing for them instead of against them. And I can't wait to get started. I couldn't be happier.
That is new Winnipeg Jets center / winger Sean Matthias speaking yesterday to the assembled media on a conference call. He is quite excited to come to Winnipeg. He tweeted about it as well. Instead of using an expletive, he actually wrote the word expletive to describe how excited he was. He's so expletive excited to come to Winnipeg and be a member of the Winnipeg Jets. He, along with Brian Strait and Quinton Howden, the three signings the Jets made in the start of yesterday's free agency period. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. The segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com.
I was with Aaron from
yesterday.
Bernstein's Deli at the wedding dinner, which was...
I wasn't invited to that.
Absolutely delicious.
Yeah, I'm sure that it sounds like it would have been. I mean, I'm sure I was available.
They didn't serve Bernstein's Deli at this dinner, though.
Oh, well, that's because the dinner wasn't held at Bernstein's Deli.
Right.
Yeah, it was held at a different restaurant.
But I thought maybe we could bring in like an Illegal Curve sandwich as kind of like a little snack in between the courses.
Yeah, it's not kosher.
It's true.
Yeah, it's kosher wedding, not kosher sandwich.
If we took the cheese off, it would be kosher, though.
I don't think so.
No.
Because the chicken and the salami would have had to have been... You know,
yes. We'd have to separate the chicken, the schnitzel,
yes,
and the salami.
Well, no, you would have also had to...
And it would have to be
would
blessed
have had
by
to
the
have
rabbi.
Been slaughtered in a kosher-appropriate way, etc. We don't need to get into the laws of kashrut today on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Drew, you better get going here. I'm going to slaughter you.
Thank you. Let's talk about the Winnipeg Jets lineup for next season. A little bit of clarity comes with the start of free agency. We have an idea now of how the Winnipeg Jets, you know, you're probably going to line up for the start of next season.
Hold on a second. If you can figure out, just as an aside, and I realize we have the whole summer to talk about this,
yeah,
but if you can figure out anything past the top line, like Scheifele, Wheeler, and Ehlers on the top line is a safe bet,
sure,
even though I think that there's a small chance that maybe Ehlers is taken off of that line. I don't personally think that it's a great chance, but I would assume that Scheifele and Wheeler are going to stay on that first line. But after that, Drew, your guess is as good as mine as far as where everybody slots in.
That's fine, but you at least
Ryan
know
Little, we know, is going to be the second line center, but
you at least
the wing
know who
positions?
You at least know who your top nine should be. You have
sure,
a fairly
but
good
I'm
idea
saying I'm saying if you, I know we know who the top nine is, but if you try to figure out who's playing right wing, left wing, you have a lot of guys that could play both wings, right?
Sure.
Like for Drew Stafford, for example.
Yeah, prefers right but can play left.
Yes, and then Matthew Perreault, we'd assume, is going to play on the wing as opposed to center.
He hasn't played much center for the Winnipeg Jets team so far.
But it's tough. And then you where does Patrick Laine slot in? Where does Kyle Connor slot in?
Sure.
I mean, it's very much in the open right now. I don't even think Paul Maurice has started to even look at it.
Probably not. It's probably too soon. But I'll tell you what's clear is that the Winnipeg Jets, at least in their forward group, have more depth than they've ever had in their top 12
this
for next season.
This is unquestionably the best forward group the Jets have ever had. I don't even think it's close. And the reason for that is Patrick Laine.
Well, you get a bonus of, you don't have to wait for him to develop. He's able to step right into your lineup as opposed to a lot of other first round picks who need a couple of years of seasoning, be it back in junior, be it overseas if they're European players or whatever it might be. You get two first round picks into your lineup.
Yep.
You know, in one season. So Kyle Connor, who tore up the University of Michigan last year and turned pro, should have been the Hobie Baker winner, but whatever. You know, Kyle Connor's able to step into your lineup. And Patrick Laine is able to step into your lineup. So it turns your top nine, which was sort of not iffy, but with a lot more question marks, and it all of a sudden you get two bona fide, what appear to be bona fide young stars. Maybe it's too soon to use that word, but potential stars, and you put them in your lineup, it changes everything. It seems like there's not going to be room for some of the players that have been mainstays in the Jets forward group for the last number of years.
Yes, and also for Jets fans that are going to think that both Patrick Laine and Kyle Connor are going to be in the top six, I wouldn't expect that.
I think they're going to both be in the top nine, though.
They'll be in the top nine, but I would be shocked if you had three very young players in your top six, meaning Ehlers on the top line, and then people that are expecting Laine and Connor to be on the opposite sides of Brian Little. I wouldn't expect that.
I think what we've seen from the young players, Ehlers, and when Scheifele finally broke through, is the first 20 games, they can sort of keep up. Maybe first 15, 20 games of the season, they can keep up.
Well, and then, every player is different, though, Drew.
Every player is different. But I'm just looking at, this is what I expect from most young players. Now, there's exceptions to the rule, certainly, that are, and Patrick Laine could be an exception to the rule because he is, that talented. But it seems like with Ehlers and with Scheifele, they came into the league and, the first 15 games, first 20 games, they were okay. They weren't great. They were okay. And then they went on a lull.
Right.
And it's a lull of the game is almost too fast for you at that point in time. The other players in the league have caught up to you. They now have some scouting reports on you. It's growing pains. And then the last 20 games of the season, 25 games of the season, you sort of get your feet back under you and you get to, you're adjusting to the game better and you're able to perform better. So you do need guys in the lineup who can move up and down depending on how your young guys are playing.
Right, and those are guys like Matthew Perreault, Drew Stafford, Sean Mathias.
Absolutely.
Right? So when you're looking at this lineup right now, and this is a good problem to have if you're Paul Maurice, if you're Charlie Huddy, if you're the Jets coaching staff, right, Drew? And
it's a fantastic problem to have.
The players that are going to get squeezed are the Joel Armias, the Marco Danos, the Nick Pitans.
Well, I think I would be shocked, all due respect, if Anthony Peluso is a member of the Winnipeg Jets at the start of the season.
He's under contract.
I know he's under contract, but I would suspect that that's a contract that would probably try and go through to the AHL.
Well, we'll have
I would be shocked if there was a spot in the top 12 for him at the start of the season.
We'll have to wait and see what happens there, right? But needless to say, there are some players that finished the season last year on the Jets that most likely won't make the team this year, and that's just because Laine, Connor, and Mathias are coming in.
Sure.
Someone's got to go out, right?
Yeah.
So I was actually a little bit surprised that a player wasn't moved at the draft from the Jets, because when you talk about some of the young talent, and I like Marco Dano's game. I'm not sure if he projects as a top six forward. From what I've seen, I think he has the skill level, but he hasn't shown it yet. He hasn't put it all together yet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the guy can score, and he's fast and everything like that, but I don't know at this point if this on this Jets team he is a top six forward, and so does he fit in on the third line? Where does he fit in? Joel Armia, I think, finished the season very strong. Where does he fit in? Is Adam Lowry a fourth line center, or is he a third line center?
Or is he a winger altogether?
Or is he a winger?
Sure.
And then because line A is coming in, does Drew Stafford now go down to the third line? Does Matthew Perreault go down to the third line? There are a lot of question marks here, and at the end of the day, there just aren't enough. It's like musical chairs. There aren't enough chairs for the amount of players they have
Which
now.
Which is, like you said from the start, this is a fantastic problem to have, because for the last, for a lot of the years, the Jets haven't had any other options. So you knew what the lineup was more or less on July 2nd, or, you know, August 1st or whatever, because, well, there weren't any other players who were really capable of beating somebody out for a spot, for the most part. I mean, obviously, stranger things have happened. But this year, you really are entering training camp with a significant number of battles, of position battles.
Yes.
And that's something that we haven't seen from this Jets organization really yet in the first 5 years.
Right. For example, Brandon Lemieux. And we're going to talk to Warren Reichel in the third hour. He played for the Windsor Spitfires this past year. A guy like Brandon Lemieux. We thought he would have a really good chance in training camp to make the team. Doesn't mean he's not going to have a good chance to make the team out of training camp, but it's going to be a lot harder now when you factor in that Line A and Connor are coming in, so they're going to be top nine forwards. And then you have Sean Mathias also coming in. We expect him to either play on the third or fourth line, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be tough for guys like Brendan Lemieux, Nick Petan to crack that fourth line, right? So, and again, these are good problems to have, and I'm sure that Pascal Vincent is going to enjoy having guys like Brendan Lemieux and Nick Petan play for him with the Manitoba Moose. Just means that right now that there are going to be some guys that are squeezed. And again, I personally, this is just my own opinion, I wouldn't be surprised if the Jets do move a forward here just because they have so many right now. Considering that there's the expansion draft coming up, maybe they just decide to expose some of these guys.
Well, they're going to have to expose somebody at some point in time. Now that Mathias is under contract, depending on what happens, of course, with the rest of the defensemen, if they decide to go with the seven forwards, 3D and a goalie, or the eight skaters and a goalie. I mean, a lot of moving parts still to be determined. No word yet, of course, on contract extensions or contract status for Mark Scheifele and for Jacob Trouba. We know that an offer sheet has not yet come for Jacob Trouba. Unfortunately, that seems as though it might have been 48 hours of our lives wasted in ripping our hair out for no reason.
Well, you know, we haven't really gotten into that, but we've had Joe Haggerty on the show, and he was reporting something that
Joe's got his sources.
Right, he had a source, but I mean, we haven't had a chance to talk about it again on air, but that was ludicrous. I mean, I think there was never a chance that Boston was going to sign Jacob Trouba to that offer sheet. The Boston Bruins have just gone through salary cap hell.
Sure.
Right? They had to get rid of Johnny Boychuk. They had to trade Dougie Hamilton. Mm-hmm. They've been right up against the salary
Milan
cap.
Lucic.
Why would they go right back into a situation where they're now not having any room under the salary cap? I just didn't think that was ever going
to
happen.
Well, it doesn't seem as if it's going to. Let's head to break. When we come back, Michael Trakos, the national hockey writer for Post Media, is going to join us, talk about NHL free agency. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Nine 9:30 in the morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're trying our darndest to get Michael Trakos of the National Post and Post Media on the line to talk about free agency.
Michael's probably trying to still absorb all of these signings that happened.
Probably. He's trying to calculate the gross domestic product of a small nation. I think that the NHL exceeded in all these signings. Over, I think, $600 million in contracts handed out yesterday was what I think I saw.
Well, Drew, it was nothing compared to what was handed out in the NBA.
That's crazy.
It was $600 million for like five players.
I know. The numbers are mind-boggling. This segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. For more information or to make an appointment, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. While we try and get Michael on the line, a couple signings from the Jets land that just came out seconds ago from Scott Brown and the team at Jets PR. The Jets have agreed to terms with RFA defenseman Julian Melchiori. It's a two-year, two-way contract worth an average annual value of $625,000 in the NHL. So one more time, repeating that one. Julian Melchiori, defenseman for the Winnipeg Jets. He signs a two-year, two-way contract worth a salary cap hit of $625,000 in the NHL. Additionally, the Winnipeg Jets have signed goaltender Jamie Phillips to a two-year entry-level NHL contract worth an AAV of $675,000 in the NHL. Jamie Phillips played at Michigan Tech and was the Mike Richter Award winner a couple of years ago with a 197 goals against average and a 922 save percentage. This in the year that he won the Mike Richter Award, he had a goals against average of 174 and a 933 save percentage. He was a former seventh round selection of the Winnipeg Jets. So one more time, Julian Melchiori, 2 years, two-way contract worth $625,000 in the NHL. Jamie Phillips, a two-year entry-level NHL contract worth an AAV of $675,000 in the NHL.
Yeah, a few things. Jamie Phillips, he actually didn't win the Mike Richter Award. He was nominated.
Pardon me.
That's okay. And Jamie Phillips has now completed 4 years at Michigan Tech, so I would assume that he's going to start the year with the Moose.
Yes, I think that would be, I think it's safe to assume that he is going to probably be the backup to Eric Comrie.
Yes.
For the Manitoba Moose, which I assume that means UC Okanjura will go play for the Tulsa Oilers in the ECHL. Jamie Phillips certainly has performed well at Michigan Tech. For a guy who was a seventh-round draft pick for the Jets, another impressive performance by a Winnipeg Jets goaltending prospect.
And Drew, Jamie Phillips is an interesting one too, because I believe if he didn't sign, he would have become a free agent,
having finished his college career.
Right, Jimmy Vesey, right? A similar type of situation. So yes. Jamie Phillips is certainly one of those forgotten prospects in the Jets system. Seventh round, 190th overall in 2012, the same year that they drafted Connor Hellebuck, by the way, in the fifth round. So Hellebuck and Phillips, fifth and seventh round in 2012, and those are two top prospects in the Jets system as far as goaltenders go. And as far as Julian Melchiori goes, he played a little bit with the Jets last year.
11 games with the Jets last
season. Yeah, and he was solid. He's another guy that is going to be competing for that bottom pairing role with Mark Stewart and with Ben Sherratt. A guy like Melchiori might...
Brian Strait now. Sure.
Right. So Melchiori is a guy that might spend a significant amount of time with the Manitoba Moose of the AHL, but he's certainly a guy that has earned his way up. He was a draft pick of the Atlanta Thrashers, if you remember. Mm-hmm. And so he's a guy that has turned himself into a pretty decent pro defenseman. And he's a guy that, he's been given a little bit of opportunity. Maybe he gets to play a few more games next year, but certainly nice to see him get a deal.
Yeah, exactly. It's another depth defenseman, just building up the depth probably for the AHL, but you never know if he performs well. A guy like Ben Sherratt sort of came out of nowhere.
Yep.
And he's become somewhat of a regular, at least a regular depth defenseman.
Ben Sherratt is
Winnipeg
a regular.
Jets.
For Julian Melchiori, he's going to have to probably take a spot away from Mark Stewart or Ben Sherratt, or we haven't even mentioned Josh Morrissey. He factors in as well on that third pairing. But needless to say, he's a guy that was not considered a top prospect in the system, but he's played well for the Manitoba Moose, and he's earned his role with the Jets and the Moose now, and he gets another contract.
Just one last point on Jamie Phillips. He finishes his NCAA career with a 57-25-8 record, which, those numbers to some extent speak for themselves. Very impressive young goaltender, adds to the Jets' depth there in the system to see how that's going to play out. Still having trouble getting a hold of Michael Tracos, but fortunately not to worry on that front. There's plenty of NHL talk to discuss. And why don't we talk about some of the other moves that have been made by Central Division teams here in the NHL into free agency, and I guess we can look back at the draft itself where there were some trades and things. Start with the Chicago Blackhawks in the Central Division. Quiet when it comes to free agency, as you would expect, given their salary cap troubles. They do sign Brian Campbell to a one-year, $2 million contract. We know the problems the Blackhawks have had on D, especially in that depth area after you get past the big three of Chalmerson and Keith and Seabrook. Your thoughts on Brian Campbell getting $2 million from the Blackhawks?
Right, and this was not a surprise at all.
He said he wanted to go back to Chicago.
Right, he's played in Chicago before. He obviously just finished the seven-year contract that he signed in Florida. It makes a lot of sense, Drew. Brian Campbell's a guy, 37 years old. He's got 1 or 2 years left in the NHL, most likely. Maybe he'll surprise us and play into his 40s, but you mentioned it. The Chicago Blackhawks really missed Johnny Oduya this past season, and they took the St. Louis Blues to a long series, so it's not like the Chicago Blackhawks season was completely disappointing, but Brian Campbell fits in on the second pairing left-side defenseman, right? So it makes a lot of sense. Apparently, by the way, Brian Campbell turned down more money with the Florida Panthers, which I thought was interesting. That means he wants to win a Stanley Cup. And I'm not saying that the Florida Panthers aren't a good team.
I have questions about their scouting department.
That's funny.
There's going to be a lot of shots at the Florida Panthers, by the way.
It's funny, though. I thought it was interesting during the Brian Campbell conference call, and you know, people were asking Brian Campbell, did he think, you know, he was too old to really be a major contributor? And he said, I feel great.
Sure.
So it's a system
he knows. It's a team he knows. It's an organization he knows. There's no reason to think that Brian Campbell, to some extent, I mean, he's slowed down a little bit, but he's still what does he do best? He skates the puck. He's got a good first pass.
He had 8 power play goals last year. This is a guy that will help them on the power play. Yeah. He'll play in all situations. He's still a guy that can play 20 to 23 minutes a game, Drew.
Right.
And you have Duncan Keith and Seabrook on your top pair, or whether they have Jarmerson with Duncan Keith, whatever. I mean, Brian Campbell is a legitimate top 4 defenseman.
Sure.
Trevor Van Riemsdyk is a guy that didn't quite work out, but he'll be on the bottom pair now for Chicago. So I really like this signing. Chicago's problem is not on forward. They have lots of depth, even without Teuvo Teravainen.
And Andrew Shaw now, who went to the Montreal Canadiens in exchange for 2 second-round draft picks.
They still have a lot of good young players. Tyler Motte's another guy that's going to come into Chicago and play for them. So
he just turned pro out of college.
Yes. So they're no issues on forward. I mean, they're absolutely stacked. I still think they have the best group of forwards in the NHL. They addressed their need. They got Brian Campbell. They got their guy.
Let's talk about the St. Louis Blues. They had 2 signings yesterday. The biggest of the 2 is signing David Perron. He gets 2 years, $7.5 million, an average annual value of $3.75 million. $3.75 million for David Perron. As well, Carter Hutton, a backup goaltender, he gets 2 years and $2.25 million, a salary cap hit of $1.125. The Carter Hutton signing had to come along because they traded Brian Elliott to the Calgary Flames at the draft. Your thoughts on David Perron getting 2 years, $7.5 million? Is he going to fit in with the St. Louis Blues organization?
Well, he's already been with the St. Louis Blues, right?
So before he went to Edmonton.
Right.
That's right.
Edmonton, Pittsburgh, Anaheim. He's been a bit of a journeyman forward the last couple of years. But
yeah, he had his best success with the Blues, though.
Yes. I've always been a David Perron fan, and unfortunately it didn't work out with him, work out for him in Pittsburgh. I look at David Perron as basically a replacement for Troy Brouwer. And somewhat different players. Troy Brouwer, I would say, is a little bit better maybe off of the rush, and David Perron's more of a guy that works the puck down low and he can go in front of the net, stuff like that. Troy Brouwer also has that ability. They're both kind of powered forward types, even though Brouwer's a taller player. But no, I like that signing. And
sounds like the St. Louis Blues, the St. Louis Blues kind of player playing below
absolutely.
The hash marks, that
yeah.
sort of thing.
And I mean, the big news that didn't happen, Drew, really, when you talk about St. Louis, is Kevin Shattenkirk wasn't traded, right?
Yeah.
And everybody's kind of expecting Kevin Shattenkirk to be traded here. It didn't happen. And to me, I'm going to be curious to see what they get back from Kevin Shattenkirk. But it looks pretty clear that Doug Armstrong's not signing long term.
It sounds like Shattenkirk only wants to go to like one of 4 teams, or any team that acquires him that isn't one of those 4 teams has to expect.
Colorado, Boston.
Yeah, has to expect that he's not going to be there long term. So sort of it. You know, Doug Armstrong's hand is sort of being played for him by Shattenkirk, in that he's not saying he doesn't have a no trade clause or anything. He'll go anywhere, but if he's not going to sign with a team, that team obviously isn't going to give up a ton in return for 1 year of Kevin Shattenkirk.
Well, it's also possible, like you said, that's a good point, Drew. It's always possible that they just keep Shattenkirk and trade him before the deadline next year.
Certainly, right? Depends on what. You'd expect the Blues are going to be a bona fide Western Conference contender again.
Well, they almost went to the Stanley Cup final. There's no reason to believe that they won't. They lost some players.
They lost Backes, and they lost Brouwer. I mean, the trade away Brian Elliott. I should mention that they gave a big contract extension to Jake Allen.
Yep.
He's got 1 year left on his existing deal, but starting next season, he's going to play under a four-year, $17.4 million contract. So he's going to make a little less than $4.5 million per season. So a nice raise for Jake Allen, who really did seem to come into his own for a while there, he was the number one goalie, and then Brian Elliott overtook him. But now they seem like they've thrown all their eggs in the Jake Allen basket in that sort of goaltending logjam that had existed in St. Louis for a number of years. Because you remember, they had Ben Bishop back in the day as well.
Yep.
They had Bishop, and they had Elliott, and they had Allen. I mean, they got Phoenix Copley in their system over from Washington a couple years ago. So it seems like Jake Allen is going to be the man for the St. Louis Blues in net.
Right, and that's why it's no surprise that he was given that contract extension, right, Drew? So, I don't have a problem with the St. Louis Blues not going after a bigger name free agent, because as it stands now, the St. Louis Blues already have some of the best depth in the entire NHL,
yeah.
Right? So they're set in goal. Their defense is still top-notch. Kevin Shattenkirk, if they lose Kevin Shattenkirk, I think, and don't get a defenseman in return, I'd have some problems, because Kevin Shattenkirk really gives you a lot of depth there on defense. Colton mm-hmm. Parayko eases that a little bit, because Colton Parayko was really a revelation this year for the St. Louis Blues after Alex Pietrangelo, Bomeister, Kevin Shattenkirk. He emerged as a very good defenseman for them.
Sure.
But Shattenkirk is the one to watch there. By the way, just got a text from Michael Tracos. He is awake, so we'll have him on next segment.
Okay, well, we'll bring Michael Tracos in after. Should mention one more thing about the Blues. Vladimir Sobotka, who played the last couple seasons in the KHL, a Blues property.
Yes, he's back.
Is back. So he's going to add to the depth of the Blues. He's definitely a top nine forward for the St. Louis Blues. Let's go to break. Michael Tracos up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Ten minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel and Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. Free agency recap show. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve. Our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the show our very good friend, Michael Tracos. Michael is the national hockey writer for Post Media Network. Good morning, Michael. Happy Canada Day to you, or belated Canada Day, as the case may be.
Yeah, today I'm treating today as my Canada Day.
You were a bit busy there yesterday, were you?
Yeah, a little busy. Well, for the first 30 minutes, at least.
Yeah, the first 30 minutes were a little bit crazy. I mean, the Leafs, you're based in Toronto, of course. Everybody
yep.
was all excited. The Steven Stamkos homecoming ran into a bit of a roadblock on Wednesday. How surprised were you that Stamkos, got so close to free agency, guess heard the pitches, but never actually reached July 1st without being a member of the, seeing what the market had to bear?
I was very surprised. I almost said written Tampa off. As a possible destination, once it got to this point.
Mm-hmm.
I just figured if they were going to sign him, it was going to happen a lot sooner than it did. And when it got this close, I just figured, okay, he probably moved on in his mind and was already kind of entertaining offers from whether it was Toronto, Buffalo, Montreal, Detroit. There are probably even more names out there, cities out there that were possible destinations, but I never thought that Tampa would be still in the mix, and goes to show what I know, and that extra year, I guess, made a huge difference, and just the fact that he knows what he's got there, and when you see Tampa re-signing Hedman and Vasilevsky, and really are just, if they get Kucherov back, and then that's going to happen considering he's an RFA. That team's going to be good for not just next season, but probably in the next 5 years. Like, they've got a long window, and that probably played a huge part into the reasons why he'd go there versus taking a chance on another team that the window may or may not be there. And in Toronto's case, you don't know when it's going to appear.
Michael, we want to go over some of the major signings that happened yesterday. I want to start off with the Edmonton Oilers, and I guess as far as the Oilers are concerned, we have to bring up the Taylor Hall for Adam Larson trade with New Jersey. What did you think of that trade, and what did you think of the term that was given to Milan Lucic from Peter Chiarelli and the Oilers?
I'll start off by saying I understand Peter Chiarelli needed to do something. When you go this many years without making the playoffs and you go this many years of finishing basically right at the bottom, big change has to happen, or at least that's the inclination, and that's why Peter Chiarelli was hired, is to not just go with the status quo, but to kind of shake things up. So with that being said, I still don't like I don't like what he did. But I understand he needed to do something, but I don't think this was the answer, and it's probably going to be second-guessing regardless of what kind of moves he did make. When you're touching the core and you're removing players that were first overall picks and that are really good players but just aren't fitting well with the rest of the lineup, there's always going to be people like me and probably a majority of people who are just kind of scratching their heads going, well, this doesn't look like it's going to work. And I like the fact that they got a defenseman. I would rather of them received something more tangible, someone that's not just going to be a question mark and saying, okay, well, in 2 years, maybe Adam Larson is going to be this kind of defenseman. Right now, he's not. Right now, he's not a point-producing guy. He's a guy that shouldn't have gotten traded for Taylor Hall or a player of that ilk. Second part to this is I don't like Milan Lucic at all at the term that they gave him, or even just the idea that they needed a Milan Lucic. Way too slow for this league right now. He's not the 30-goal player that he was 5 or 6 years ago in Boston. And the idea that you need to intimidate opponents or be a bodyguard is just so outdated and archaic right now in the NHL. Like, you watch the Pittsburgh Penguins win a Stanley Cup last season. The way they intimidated opponents wasn't by hitting them or fighting them. It was by flying down the wing with Carl Hagelin and Phil Kessel just racing down the wings and being a scoring threat every time they step on the ice. That was intimidating if you're an opponent. Not the idea that you had a guy who's going to smash your head in. So what they should have done is really either kept with Hall or traded him or signed a player like a Louis Erickson, someone that's going to add more to the offense and just going to be a little bit of a different type of player. But I don't know how Lucic's going to keep up with Connor McDavid, first off, and I don't know what he's going to look like 7 years down the line. Well, I don't even know what he's going to look like this year or next year, because the way he's trending is just he's got a lot of miles and a lot of wear on his tires.
You're making friends in Edmonton, Michael, but we like it. Michael Tracos joins us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show talking about NHL free agency.
So, Michael, now we know that you loved the Milan Lucic signing.
Yes.
Speaking of head-scratching signings, what did you think of Thomas Vanek signing the one-year contract with the Red Wings? And on that note, we'll go over back east to Montreal. What is Mark Bergevin thinking when it comes to Alexander Radulov? Because he gave him quite a bit of money there, didn't he?
I like both signings. I was a fan of really both of those signings. I love the fact that they're one-year deals.
Sure.
Like, so they're both prove-me contracts are, I think, the best ones, because if they don't work out, well, it's the player who really suffers, because good luck getting another contract in the NHL. So if you're Thomas Vanek and you've really kind of worn out your welcome in Montreal after getting traded at the deadline, and in Minnesota where everything should have been put in place where he felt comfortable in that city, considering he went to college there, and that didn't work out. Well, now he's on a one-year contract, $2.6 million, isn't a lot of money. If this guy can get 20 goals for the Red Wings at that cost or that price, that is huge. He's going to get another contract, maybe not in Detroit, but somewhere else. And if it doesn't work out and Detroit's at the deadline, and they need to move a player, well, maybe there's going to be a taker, considering that that's not a big cap hit and whatever, you're getting a depth forward. So I like that deal. I also like the Franz Nielsen deal going to Detroit as well. I think that's a player that's going to fit in really well there.
It just seems like a very Detroit kind of player, doesn't he?
Totally. And neither of those guys is going to replace the offense of Pavel Datsyuk, but really, that wasn't going to be achievable in any kind of stretch. Maybe a Louis Erickson would have been a really nice fit there. And good on Vancouver for getting them, although for Vancouver, it's the wrong player at the wrong time. So we'll go into that. But
you know, just stay out of Western Canada by the sound of it, Michael. I got to say, you're welcome in Manitoba, but I wouldn't go, I wouldn't venture west of Saskatchewan.
Yeah, Mike, let's start talking about the Jets here.
No.
Yeah, yeah.
Not a lot to talk about with anything. The Jets.
Well, then they're probably the best team that came out of free agency. Yeah. They didn't make those mistakes. But Radulov's another guy I really like. Like, everyone keeps mentioning the character issues and whatever, but that was so long ago, and it wasn't on ice. It's like, if you just look at this guy's on-ice production, he's been fantastic in the KHL. Like, he's, what is he, a three-time MVP there, a top three in scoring in the last 3 years. So all this guy does is put up big points, and he's such a big power forward that I think he's exactly what Montreal had been missing. And again, the one-year prove-me contract, if it doesn't work out, if he's one of those guys that's like a total problem child off the ice, well, he's totally burned his bridges in the NHL, and I think him leaving Russia almost burned his bridges in that country as well. So really, this is in Radulov's best interest to kind of shape up and play nice, and having Shea Weber there is almost kind of a watchdog over him. Is going to be a perfect scenario for a guy like Radulov. So I really like it. This is exactly what Montreal needed. And again, they didn't give up term, and I think term is the biggest thing when we're looking at a lot of these contracts. Like Kyle Poso going for 7 years was, I think, a huge mistake. Andrew Ladd going for 7 years was another huge mistake. And David Backes for 5 years, considering he's 32 years old and has been kind of trending downwards in terms of production, is another huge mistake. So you get a guy of 1 year or 2 years, you're kind of laughing.
Yeah, it's amazing the number of players who think that they're going to need to find the fountain of youth to make those contracts not look terrible. Michael, we'll let you go on this last question. You mentioned him in passing in the previous answer. That's Shea Weber, of course, the biggest of all the blockbuster moves in that crazy Wednesday 23 minutes was PK Subban to Nashville in exchange for Shea Weber. You know, justify that trade to me from a Montreal Canadiens perspective.
You're better today, you're better next season, you're possibly better the season after with Shea Weber in your lineup than you are with PK Subban. So Montreal wants to win a cup, and again, getting Radulov on a one-year deal, hopefully you have a healthy Carey Price. I think you're in a better position today to get to that goal. Five, seven, how many years Shea Weber's got left on his contract? Yeah. Not going to work out that way. I think eventually Subban is going to look like the better player. But right now, I don't think anyone would take Subban over Weber if you're building a team for today.
Well, I hope Montreal Canadiens fans hope that you are correct with that, because that was when you saw that come over the wire, what was your reaction? I mean, shock and awe for a little bit?
Totally shocked. Like, again, you don't see good player go for good player like that. Like, you see the Taylor Hall for Adam Larson type guys where you're going, okay, one team made out better than the other, but to see two franchise defensemen get moved for one another, it was completely shocking. And I like the trade for both teams. I think Nashville is going to be laughing at the end of this deal. And even this year, I think with Peter Laviolette, I think Subban's the exact kind of, or the perfect type of defenseman that he needs in that market or in that team. So watch Nashville. That's no longer the Barry Trotz Nashville Predators there. They've got a lot of offense, and they got a lot of offense on the back end. So
yeah, they're going to definitely
be real. Real exciting to watch them.
Exactly. They're going to be one of the more exciting teams in the NHL. Michael Trakos is the national hockey writer for Post Media Network. Michael, always appreciate your time. I'm sure we'll do it again this summer, but we'll let you get started, I guess, with your day after Canada Day festivities.
All right, boys. Thanks very much for having me on.
Thanks, Michael. We'll do it again soon.
Cheers, Mike.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we bring in Stu Grimson, Nashville Predators color analyst, to talk about the Subban-Weber deal and to talk about some of the Predators' moves. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Saturday the 2nd of July. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/ Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program Stu Grimson. Stu is the Nashville Predators color analyst. Stu, good morning, and thanks for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hey, always glad to be part of anything kind of on the cutting edge like an Illegal Curve.
Nice line. And I guess you sort of get the best of both worlds now. Happy Canada Day yesterday, and you got the 4th of July coming up on Monday. So right in the middle of a nice long weekend for you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's a terrific moment to kind of take a pause, breathe a little, digest some of these unrestricted free agent transactions. And I'll tell you what, there is no off-season for hockey anymore. There's always something to talk about.
There certainly always is something to talk about, and the Nashville Predators gave us something to talk about on Wednesday afternoon, probably making the biggest splash in the course of that crazy 23 minutes of frenzied action when they acquired P.K. Subban from the Montreal Canadiens in exchange for Shea Weber. You know, when your phone buzzed or somebody gave you a heads up and you saw that trade, you know, what went through your mind?
Well, I was dumbfounded, really. I mean, more for, you know, I guess one side of the transaction. We had been hearing for several days, even going back to maybe just pre-2016 entry draft, that P.K. Subban was perhaps available. Of course, Mark Bergevin, general manager, comes out and kind of denies it, tries to, you know, quell the trade rumor talk, but appears there was a little more there than Mark was willing to let on. So I was surprised by, you know, really more the fact that it was Shea Weber that ends up, you know, kind of swapping spots with PK on the Montreal Canadiens. And I think as much as anything, you guys, I found it amazing that, I mean, when do you see it in our sport, it really even any other sport, where two franchise players swap teams? I mean, it was remarkable.
Stu, how hard do you think it was for David Poile to trade Shea Weber? He was, of course, drafted by the Nashville Predators. He's played his entire NHL career. He matched that offer sheet several years back. How hard do you think it was for David Poile? Because, as you mentioned, Shea Weber was the franchise defenseman, the face of the franchise.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. I think it was very hard. I think it would have been among the hardest moments David has had to face in his career as a manager, a long career as a manager. But, you know, the one thing I think that encourages me at the end of the day, you know, I think David has great objectivity about things like that. In spite of all Shea has done for this organization, for this franchise, you know, you can never get married to any particular asset, any particular player. And you always have to maintain that level of objectivity if, you know, at the end of the day, you want to improve your team. So I think he looked at the dollars and cents. I think he looked at the way these two teams, these two players rather, compare to one another. And I think at the end of the day, David comes down on the, you know, let's go ahead and make this deal. He makes that decision ultimately recognizing P.K. Subban may be, his game may be a better fit for the modern day NHL, one where we'd like to see our blue liners get up into the action.
Stu Grimson's our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, discussing the Subban-Weber trade, discussing the moves made by the Nashville Predators. You know, Stu, you've watched Shea Weber as much as anybody, probably more than most anybody that watches the NHL, given your role as a color analyst for the Predators. A lot of criticism has been leveled at Shea Weber in the last, you know, maybe year, 18 months, that his game is slipping. Have you seen signs of that, or do you think that is, you know, sort of an analytics-driven storyline?
Yeah, I think it is more than anything. I really do. You know, you go back and you look at – here's the best comparison for me. Nashville in the 2015 playoffs probably would have been a much better spot to knock off the Chicago Blackhawks first round had they been healthy, and healthy means – with Shea Weber. They were without Mike Fisher as well. That was a key loss. But in my estimation, Shea Weber on the blue line left a gaping hole. So a healthy Weber, a healthy decor in the 2016 playoffs, I think you got a better sense, a better glimpse of what the Nashville Predators were capable of, pushing San Jose to the very brink in the conference semifinals, simply because, again, you had a healthy Weber complementing Roman Josi on the right, sorry, the left side. So it was just really a testament of how important Shea Weber is to this group and the kind of impact he will have on the Montreal Canadiens. This is a guy that is just solid in, you know, both ends of the ice, a real competitor and a salt of the earth type of guy. He has given this organization nothing but great, great service year after year.
Who's going to take over the sort of the leadership void that the Predators lose by having Weber go to Montreal? I mean, obviously he was the sort of the pulse and the heartbeat of that dressing room. Big shoes to fill for anybody to take on that role. Who do you think is going to fill that void?
Yeah, there are a handful of guys I could really envision stepping up in that area. I mean, Mike Fisher comes to mind right off. However, Mike is just a single year left on his current deal, and this may be a guy. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. He's got lots going on in other parts of his life. Mike may just step away from the game post 2016-17. So not sure you'll see a C pinned on Mike Fisher, but there are a number of other quality guys inside that room that to me would make great candidates, like a Ryan Johansson, who I believe is really just starting to come into his own as an NHLer, brings a lot of great energy and vitality to the locker room every day. He's got a real hearty appetite for the game and for life in general. Very infectious personality and a high-end talent. James Neal, I think, plays a very determined brand of hockey, is a terrific leader by example, a guy that's been around the NHL a good long while. He knows what it takes to rally a group together. He, of course, has played in and around other great leaders like Crosby, like Weber over the course of his career.
You know, Stu, you just mentioned James Neal, and when you think about P.K. Subban now joining the Nashville Predators, P.K. Subban, James Neal, Philip Forsberg, Ryan Johansson, all players that David Poile has traded for, is it safe to say that we should just name David Poile executive of the decade now that he's acquired P.K. Subban?
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, it used to be the case, and not all that long ago, you were, you know, only too quick to slap the label, the brand on Nashville as a small market franchise. But each and every transaction that David makes over the last handful of years, they are not small market moves. They are bold moves, and they are moves that most would argue these are cap team type moves. And certainly they are moves that a team with its eye on the big prize, the silver chalice, the Stanley Cup, they are kind of moves that a manager that is solely determined to win that big prize, they are the kind of trades that a guy with those intentions would make.
Stu Grimson is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stu is a color analyst for the Nashville Predators. You know, you look at the head coach of the Predators, Peter Laviolette. He's been there since 2014, known as playing sort of an up-tempo style, which is so rare in this day and age of everybody being so cautious and defensive first and system this and position that. Doesn't that just sound like the perfect scenario for P.K. Subban and his sort of freewheeling and creative personality?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's exactly why, maybe not exactly why, but, you know, I'm sure there were several factors that went into the Subban acquisition. I would argue that's probably the most important. Again, his game is a better fit for today's NHL. Nothing against Shea Weber, but Shea Weber plays a somewhat more static type game in the offensive zone. And when I say static, he's back at the blue line, bombing away with that lethal and accurate shot of his, and he's very effective in his own right. At the end of the day, Subban pushing the play deeper in the offensive zone, making it harder for teams to defend against, and that is a great fit for a Laviolette type system. So it will be really interesting. I envision the following kind of coming together at some point early next year. I see Matthias Ekholm, perhaps Subban on the right side with Matthias Ekholm as one of the top two pairings. And then Roman Josi and Ryan Ellis as a left and a right played a little bit together last year when Shea Weber is out, and they were dynamic. So the point I'm making is you've got a couple of pairings there, your top four that are just, in one respect, really hard to play against. They're very responsible in the defensive zone, but you watch the kind of offense, the kind of difficulty they're going to give opposition clubs in the offensive zone. These are guys that have a great sense of when to go, when to activate, and when they do it, they've got the skill set to really make some big plays happen.
You know, Stu, just getting away from PK Subban for a second, what were your thoughts on Philip Forsberg's 6-year contract that he signed about a week ago? And do you have any concerns at all about Philip Forsberg and how he struggled in that second round series against the Sharks?
No, I really don't. I think all players kind of go through a funk here and there. Regrettably for the Preds and for Philip, it happened to be during a critical time of the postseason. But Philip is a guy we have yet to see the ceiling on. Young Philip, you guys, he still scored in the low 30s last year. And two, you know, he went through some stretches during the regular season where he was struggling to find the back of the net. This to me is a guy that 40 goals is well within his grasp. And for David Poile to get Philip buttoned down for 6 years, and especially at that number, an annual hit of 6.0 per year, to me, I really think you're going to see that, you know, perhaps like a Roman Josi, Philip Forsberg come year two, maybe year three of that contract, you're going to be looking at him like he's one of the best values in all the NHL. I think it's a very fair contract, and one both sides can be very excited about, term and comp.
Stu, we'll let you go on this last question. For a lot of their existence, the Predators have been sort of not the little engine that could or the little team that could, but, you know, sort of always a little bit under the radar of NHL notoriety. With the move, with the PK Subban move, with the Ryan Johansson move earlier in the offseason, getting Forsberg under contract for, you know, the 6-year extension, have the expectations in the Predators organization now changed, where it's no longer just okay to make the playoffs and be a first round team or a second round team, but you look at them and, you know, they're pretty built for a long, deep playoff run in the competitive Western Conference?
Yeah, and I think that's fair. I really do. I think certainly the baseline for this team is, you know, securing a top 8 spot in the Western Conference each and every year. And then too, to your point, having made some noise and pushed an eventual Stanley Cup finalist, the San Jose Sharks, to the very brink, I think the expectation is for this group to add to that, to go on a good deep run, conference finals or beyond, in the years to come. In large part due to the transactions that they've made, Ryan Johansson adding a PK Subban, I think you're a little bit better net-net at the end of the day. But I would make this further point, and this doesn't get much attention. It is a rather young group mm-hmm. that the Nashville Predators put on the ice. It is a group of 20-somethings, both at the defensive core and the forward core, that I think have yet to see to play their best hockey. So just organically, as a group, without any regard to a further transaction or acquisition, this is a group that really should improve by 10 or 15% individually, and then think of the impact that would have just in terms of the whole outfit. So there's a lot to be excited about, and, certainly I would agree with your comment, the premise of your question. The expectations certainly have changed and probably have risen. Given this summer's transactions.
Stu Grimson is a color analyst for the Nashville Predators. Stu, really appreciate your time this morning. Great insight into the Subban acquisition and the Predators in general.
Hey, good to be with you guys. Have a great show.
You too, Stu. Thanks very much. Take care of yourself.
Happy Canada Day, Stu.
Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, we discuss the Taylor Hall for Adam Larson deal.
Listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Wow. 20 minutes past 10 o'clock in the morning. Big thank you to both Stu Grimson and Michael Trakos for joining us to talk about the trades and free agency. In case you missed any of the program, in case you missed either of those interviews, they will be available for download on iTunes and on TSN1290.ca, and of course on our website, illegalcurve.com. This segment of the show brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com.
No, Drew, I got to give Frank credit. And I know Frank is listening because he listens every week.
He does.
Good friend of the show.
Very good.
He was calling for the Jets to actually sign Quinton Howden as a possible UFA target. I also had a piece up a couple days ago with five defensemen that the Jets could target. Three of those guys were already signed. Brian Strait wasn't one of them, but Frank was actually calling for the Jets to sign Quinton Howden.
Sounds like I should replace you with Frank.
You know, Drew, you could replace me.
Actually,
with,
as I'll give you credit.
You could replace me with a pylon or, you know, 20 hockey pucks and
30 hockey
better
pucks
than me.
Minimum. 30. I got to give you credit, though. It chagrins me to do this, but credit where credit is due.
Stamkos.
You did say from the start, you know, myself and the artist formerly known as Richard Pollock both said that he...
Mr. Pollock now,
yep. Pardon me, yeah. We both said that Stamkos was not going to re-up in Tampa Bay. You said all along that you thought he was going to stay and remain as a member of the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Do we have audio here?
We do have audio, but I'm not going to play it because we don't have it handy or anything. And you really could have prepared the audio if you wanted to do that. I know, Rory's giving you a look like, okay. You know, making the Rory look bad here.
Even though I love for you to shower me with all of this praise...
It really makes me feel... You know, bleh.
But towards the end of the season, and especially after the trade deadline, I didn't think Stamkos was going to re-sign in Tampa. I thought more so earlier in the season,
sure.
It was more likely.
But you probably thought, like everyone else, as it got closer and closer to July 1st, and as the deal did not get done until Wednesday, you thought that it would seem like he was going to hit free agency.
Well, Drew, I think as recently, or as long ago, I should say, as a year ago,
yeah.
People already thought Steven Stamkos wasn't going to be re-signing. And that was probably because of all of those, remember those ice time issues,
sure.
When the Tampa Bay Lightning went to the Stanley Cup Finals.
Center, they're playing him on the wing.
Right, so after last summer,
yeah.
It was almost like Steven Stamkos was in his last season. He was a lame duck player with the Tampa Bay Lightning. But hey, Steven Stamkos, I think, saw how well the Tampa Bay Lightning did in this year's playoffs. Because,
without him.
Right. He only played one game, and as far as I'm concerned, he shouldn't have even been in that game.
Sure.
But the point is, the Tampa Bay Lightning, with Victor Hedman, with Nikita Kucherov, Andre Palat, Tyler Johnson, Ben Bishop, were expecting not to be re-signed long-term. But needless to say, the Tampa Bay Lightning are a powerhouse right now. Jonathan Drouin, we should mention. Yeah. I was wrong on him. I thought Jonathan Drouin was going to be traded. But it looks like he's a big part of the future. Former
Steve Yzerman has played each of these hands very, very well.
Very well.
Very well. And unfortunately, not all general managers, or I guess fortunately for us because we get to make fun of them, not all general managers play their hands quite as well as Steve Yzerman does. Edmonton, Peter Chiarelli, not the greatest week if you listen to the hockey pundits, as the Taylor Hall for Adam Larson deal was almost universally panned. Here is Mr. Chiarelli talking about the Taylor Hall for Adam Larson trade.
Obviously, Taylor's been a very good player here. He leaves everything on the ice, and I respect that. I've been very quite public in saying we're looking for some defensemen. We really got to shore up our defense. And this is the price that you have to pay. Adam Larson is 6'3", very smart player. He had a terrific year this past year. He can log a lot of minutes. He can play 25, 27, 28 minutes. He can match up against all the top forwards. He can move the puck. You know, it's unfortunate in these deals that you have to, you know, this is what you have to do. But I felt it was time to act on it.
I don't think anybody has a problem with the fact that Peter Chiarelli acted on the need to change up his core. I think everybody would agree that it was time to do that. But you watch as much New Jersey Devils hockey as anybody that I know.
Not as much as I used to, but
not
yeah.
as much as you used to, but you're a Devils fan going yep. way back to Marty Brodeur and Scott
yep.
Stevens.
Yep.
Is there any universe in which Adam Larson is anywhere a reasonable return for Taylor Hall?
No. And by the way, you know, Peter Chiarelli, I realized that he had to make a move here. He had to improve his defense. He just had to. And Jason Demers is another guy that is rumored to be going to Edmonton, right? So it's possible that we see that. But when you talk about Taylor Hall, you're talking about a guy who has an 80-point season under his belt. Mm-hmm. He's a four-time 20-goal scorer. He had 65 points last year for a horrible Edmonton team. This is arguably a top-five left winger in the entire league. This is a former first overall pick, a guy who we thought might make Team Canada's Olympic team in 2014.
Certainly in the conversation.
Certainly in the conversation. He's an elite winger in the NHL. He instantly becomes New Jersey's best forward.
Yeah.
I have no problem saying that. I mean, Mike Camilleri, Adam Henrique, good players. Taylor Hall, though.
Mike Camilleri and Adam Henrique would say that Taylor Hall is a better player than they are.
Taylor Hall is a guy that's got lightning speed. And I realize that Taylor Hall is not a perfect player. He struggled defensively. I'll admit that. And in Edmonton, he struggled as well in a leadership role. Because when you started to have guys like Connor McDavid and Draisaitl come in, you know, there was more being expected of Taylor Hall. I realized, Drew, that Peter Chiarelli had to make a move for a defenseman and a right-shot defenseman. Adam Larson's a good defenseman. Don't get me wrong. He can play 45 minutes a game. Adam Larson is not a top defenseman in the league. And I realize he was a former fourth overall pick in 2011 by the Devils. But this is a guy who was benched by Pete DeBoer repeatedly. Mm-hmm. He's a guy who played better this past year under John Hines. But quite simply, this is just not a good enough of a return for Taylor Hall. And I realize that the Oilers are blessed with all of these awesome young forwards. We talked about McDavid, Draisaitl. You throw in Eberle, Nugent Hopkins, you know, Lucic now. I realize that the Oilers are trading from a position of strength here. But again, when you're talking about Taylor Hall, you're talking about an all-star elite left winger. And Adam Larson is not an elite defenseman. He just isn't. You can look at the puck possession numbers, Drew, and his numbers are good. Look, Adam Larson can skate. I mean, this is a guy who I think people thought was going to be Nicklas Lidström when he was drafted fourth overall. He's above average defenseman. He is above average defenseman, I should say. But he is certainly not the number one dominant defenseman that the Edmonton Oilers need. Like, when you're talking about top defensemen, Drew Doughty, Brent Burns, Erik Karlsson, Duncan Keith, Shea Weber, PK Subban, Ryan Suter, whoever you consider to be the elite defenseman in the NHL, Adam Larson's not in that conversation. Now, he's 23.
If Adam Larson was Canadian, he's obviously not, but if he was Canadian, he would never be considered to make a Team Canada.
And Drew, 23 years old, he's got many years to establish himself. As we know, defensemen take longer to mature, so his best years are most likely going to be between 25 and 28, right?
But even if he matures, what's his ceiling? I mean, his ceiling is he's not going to be an offensive defenseman. He doesn't have the... I mean, his offensive game has never materialized.
Well, on Edmonton,
that point,
though, I mean, he will be given offensive responsibilities, and he'll play on the power play. I'm sure he'll play quite a bit on the penalty kill as well, but you're right. I don't think he's ever going to turn into a 60-point defenseman, put it that way. I might be wrong about that, but it's what they gave up to get him. Like, to me, if you give up Neil Yakupov
or even if you
to
give
get
up
Adam Larson...
Like, Adam Larson should be the return for Nugent Hopkins, who's a bit of a diminished asset.
No, I wouldn't do that even.
You wouldn't even do that? Or how about Eberle?
No.
So those guys are clearly not as good as Taylor Hall.
I think there was so much pressure on Peter Chiarelli that he made this move,
panicked.
And he tried. But he tried to make Peter Chiarelli tried to get Subban in Edmonton. What? I mean, they can deny it all they want, but they tried to get him.
And apparently, what Edmonton or what the Canadians were asking for Subban was something of Draisaitl, the fourth overall pick, and either Darnell Nurse or Oscar Klefbom.
Drew, if you traded Taylor Hall for PK Subban, I would say that's a fair trade.
That's a reasonable trade.
I'm a huge Taylor Hall fan, though. I got to admit that. I know some people don't like him as much as I do, but
he's a top line left winger.
Look at his numbers in the NHL, and I realize that, you know, again, on the defensive side of the puck, he struggled a little bit. But I think when you're talking about Taylor Hall, a guy, as we mentioned, he's had 26, 27 goal seasons. I think he could easily score 30 goals on New Jersey.
Yeah.
I think the best years are yet to come. He's only what, 23, 24 years old? I mean, he's the same age, 1 year older than Adam Larson. So, I think it was a horrible trade. But the problem, the good news is Edmonton's got Connor McDavid. They've got Jesse Puljujarvi. They've got Leon Draisaitl. They've got Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. So they're not going to miss Taylor Hall as much as some other teams.
Sure. But still, the return is not enough.
The defense is just still not good enough.
Let's go to break. When we come back, Dave Jamieson from our sister station, TSN 1260 in Edmonton, joins us to talk more about Hall for Larson. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.